Hi everyone, and welcome to SPED Homeschool Conversations. We're so happy that you're with us at this matinee session of our show. We're not going to compete with politics tonight, so we are doing a matinee, and my guest today is Dr. Stephen Green. Welcome, Stephen. Thank you for joining us.
And thank you.
Yeah, glad to have you here. We're going to talk about teaching time management to students, which I know a lot of parents, whether they have a student that struggles or academically or not, this tends to be a topic that we just all need a little help and expertise on. So I'm glad that you're here tonight. And this kind of wraps up our month. Last month we dealt with a lot of at-home strategies for things that students struggle with, whether it was physical therapy, sensory needs, preschool years, all those kind of things that we definitely need some expert advice on as parents, as we homeschool students. So we're kind of wrapping up October with the 1st of November with this broadcast. But I'm excited to talk about that. And I also want to thank LearnWell Homeschool Collective for sponsoring this episode of SPED Homeschool Conversations. We'll hear more from them about halfway through the broadcast and what they do to support homeschoolers who are teaching children with special educational needs. So thank you, LearnWell. So, Stephen, in getting started, I would love our audience to just get to know you a little better. You are you do a lot of things, and you have an extensive background. I'd love
for reminding me. I need 27 hours in a day.
I know. I kind of feel that way too. But, what kind of got you interested in helping students be successful? How did that pull in from your background? And, let's kind of just go from there.
Well, the shortest, this could be a 50-minute answer, but I'm going to try to limit it to about 2.5. Both my parents were teachers. Okay. Specifically, my mom was a first-grade teacher for 41 years in the same school district, which I don't know ever happens anymore. And my dad was a computer programmer turned college professor. So I grew up, we'd eat dinner, and we had a pretty close family, and we would eat dinner, then my mom would grade papers or make lesson plans, my dad would be doing stuff. So it just was always kind of part of the feel.
Right.
I went to college as I was an education and math major. Where I went to college, you had to major in what you wanted to get your certificate in. And I got done, and actually I was offered a teaching job, but my advisor in college got offered a job at another university and offered to bring me there as an assistant. And 6 years later, I'd end up getting a doctorate there. And none of that was planned. It just kind of happened. But I think, I was lucky in the sense that I found very young what I really enjoyed doing and what I was passionate about. Which was, I don't want to necessarily say helping people, because that can mean a lot of different things. But I think it was from the standpoint of teaching people. I really liked instructing and putting together ways that people could learn. And I remember in sixth or seventh grade, we used to break up into groups, and everybody always just somehow would come to me, "Hey, can you teach me this?" And I guess, so I had sort of a proclivity to it, but It always just seemed to be easy for me, and I always seemed to be able to get the language down to help people. And as I honed my craft, I'm not 21 anymore. So the longer you do something like this, you find out what works, you find out what doesn't work as well. But the motivation is really the back end. The motivation is working with a child, or a family, or a class room or whatever, and just getting that sense you can't make it, that feeling that you help someone, or you got them from a point to another point, and now they're better off somehow. And I'll just tell you one story. A couple weeks ago, it was in the end of the summer. My wife's cooking something, so of course I had forgotten. Of course I didn't listen. Imagine that, a guy. When she sent me to the supermarket the first time. So I had to run back to the supermarket to get another thing. Yeah, I know, but whatever. So I'm standing in line to buy one thing, and there's a person standing behind me who looked very familiar, but I couldn't place it. And he says, "Aren't you Dr. Green?" I said, "Yeah." I had tutored this boy when he was in ninth grade. Huh. I tutored in biology, and then a couple years later, we did SAT work, and we did some kind of executive functioning strategy work. Well, lo and behold, he is now the assistant head of thoracic surgery at a local hospital near where I am. So since then, he had gone all through high school, college, medical school, internship, whatever it takes. And his comment was something like, yeah, I remember you taught me biology. I never would have made it through that class without you. So it was kind of just a very, very random chance encounter. But, you know, it's one of those things that you can't manufacture, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that's why we all, when I say we, anybody in education who has a passion for it does these sorts of things.
Yeah.
I think a different way to answer what you asked me is a scale, right? One-on-one, you can only affect so many people. So what I've really tried to do is magnify that and create situations and like my book and things where I could have an impact on a broader scale. Not to sell books. I mean, yeah, that's nice. But just to get information I think is useful and helpful and practical to the broadest audience that we can, and, you know, hosting communities and things, and hosting things like what you're doing here.
Right. So it's empowering to give people resources that will help them succeed. And the dividends, I think, are better than money. And I'm kind of in the same boat.
Well, sometimes they have to, because you usually make a whole lot of money in education, not a whole lot of multimillionaire school teachers, but you know, listen, that's, you know, success is a very relative term, you know, and happiness is a relative term. I'll put it another way. I went about 3 years ago to a funeral of my second grade teacher. She was 88, 90. I mean, she lived a long, good life. Peggy, there was 1,000 people there. There was people in line, and the clergy was trying to start the, I don't know, eulogy, whatever. There were so many people in line in the family saying, no, just wait five minutes. And finally they just had to get going because they had another funeral after it.
Oh, wow.
And this woman in over however many years of teaching had impacted that many people. And it wasn't just that she impacted them. They remembered it. You know, they would come back from wherever they were to, you know, attend this event to honor her. I thought that was really, really touching.
So true. Yeah. We forget that it's the things that we do on a daily basis consistently that affect a lot of people. And So your passion is to help students to find success. And I know that very much built into that is time management. How did that come about with you kind of focusing on time management? Was that something that you just found over time and working with students that I need to create a resource that, because this seems to be an issue that
actually,
a lot of students run into?
Yes, that is at least half the answer. I had been a teacher, I'd been a college instructor, a college professor. I'd done a lot of different classroom instructional things. And then in the meantime, I was always tutoring privately. And one thing I noticed was somebody would come over and we'd be working on whatever, math, bio, whatever subject it was. And a lot of the reason they weren't getting the information was because they were completely unorganized. It was the classic thing. The papers would be cockeyed in every angle around their book. Nothing was dated. They couldn't find a worksheet. Oh, I know I got a worksheet for homework, Steve, but I don't know where I put it. And this was before you could go and pull it up online, you know, whatever the technology is today. So I started just doing basic organizational, now it would probably be called executive function skills, but we didn't have those fancy words back in,
you know,
when Lincoln was president, when I started. So, so there were two things I found that were holding people back were just physical organization, just it's simple stuff, color coding, dating, you know, putting tests in one part of a notebook and notes in another. But then the other one was managing time. And if I had a nickel, every time a parent would say to me, you know, I argue with my kid for 50 minutes over a homework assignment that took him 10.
Yep.
Now, I can't imagine anyone listening today or ever to this is going to say, oh, that never happened to me.
No, that's a common problem. I can tell you that.
Super. Right. So, you know, so it's a matter of selling value to a kid. Hey, if you plan your time out and you use it properly, not only are you going to save plenty of time, one, but you're going to use the time that you do use more efficiently, two. You're going to get more done, and you'll actually have more free time to do the stuff you probably would prefer to do, whatever that happens to be for a 12, 8, 17-year-old person. So the balance of time management and what I call information management kind of became the core of something that I started to teach in parallel with all my individual academic tutoring.
Yeah, I could see that it would be much more effective instead of just focusing on the academics when you see all these things that are causing the underlying issues.
Yeah, well, and listen, from a this is not why I did it, but from a completely production standpoint, because if a parent's hiring me to tutor a kid, they're basically paying you for results, right?
Right.
They're not paying me for my looks. maybe they are. No, they're not paying. They're paying me because they're sending me or to anybody, you know, in homeschool, you know, whatever your thing is. If you're sending your child or your consortium or your cluster of kids to a professional to educate them, you expect them to get educated, right?
Right.
It's a gray thing. You know, it's a loose judgment. But I found by teaching the kids this and investing in them, teaching them these techniques, I could be more productive in my 30 or 60 minute or sometimes 90 minute sessions with them academically, which made their grades better, made their attitude better, which made the parents happier, which, and again, it's not why I did it, but frankly, it was good for business. And that enabled me to grow the business. I got more and more people I could impact, and it all sort of mushroomed. As a sidebar, that's what led to me authoring, actually, at the time it was my second book, but you know, one of my most successful book, I guess you could call it.
Yeah. And do you have that? I
know. Funny. What's this right here? I can't believe it just happened here right next to me.
Maximum Education.
Now, I don't even know if it's screened right, but Maximum Education—that's the name of the book.
And you can find that on Amazon, right?
You can get it on Amazon. I have my own site. It's maximumeducation.net, N-E-T. But this is not War and Peace. I mean, this is 80 pages. And the reason I got all
perfect.
Those things, this is my working copy. That's why it's, is because I'll pull this out still and say, hey, go to page 42. There's something there that will help you. But the book is basically a hands-on workbook to help kids, students, parents, too, manage these things. So I look at time management as a tool to really get what you want to get done. I used to use the metaphor of sharpening the blades on a lawnmower, right? Sharpening blades on a lawnmower don't do anything until you try to cut the lawn, right?
That's so true. Yes, exactly.
So time management doesn't do you any good until you start studying. You can plan it out all you want, right? Yeah, I'm going to do this.
Kind of like your to-do list.
Exactly, right? So I used to talk about kids all the time. Oh, I'm tired of hearing about mowing the lawn. Well, it's too bad. So I look at it as a tool, a functional tool, that a student can use. And by the way, they keep using it later as adults when they get into jobs and professions and careers. That is an enables them to be better at their job at the time, which is being a student. Now, we could break down time management into every level of minutia that you want to, because it's not as simple as saying, go plan, right? I mean, if it was that easy,
We wouldn't probably
be having this discussion.
Figured out.
Right. So there's kind of a science to it, I believe, and there's kind of an art to it. And then there's the third piece, which is making it fit in the rest of your life, right?
Right. Exactly.
I mean, I'm not exactly sure about your population of listeners, but generally I get kids, they don't have that many extra hours or minutes in a day. You know, they're getting up, they're doing their schoolwork, whether it's home or otherwise. They might have sports, they might have activities, they might have gymnastics, they have dance and art, whatever.
And
right, they got 100 things going on. And then, oh, by the way, you got to do homework or something like that. So it's an efficiency thing as well.
So do you find that students that you introduce these concepts to are really willing to embrace them, because it's something that they were trying to kind of do on their own with their own methods? Or is it sometimes a little bit of a power struggle?
If I ask them to do it because I'm not their parent, it usually meets very little resistance.
That's an interesting
thing. But here's what happens. And I don't know if you have children. We haven't gotten
I have three, yes.
Okay, well, we hadn't gotten that close in our conversation. But so, you know, here's how it happens, Peggy. And I got to think there's people out there wondering. I know where he's going with this. I'm working with a kid in my space, you know, in my classroom or my whatever, my office. And I say, hey, we're going to do this, Peggy. You're going to do this when you go home. You're going to do this every day, whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I got it, Steve. Got it. Parent walks in. What'd you learn today?
Duh.
Yeah, exactly.
How'd it go?
Good.
Yeah.
What'd you learn?
How to learn.
So it's weird, but it just is, because I hear this from a gazillion, million, thousand parents. That why is it that when you or somebody else ask them something, they're the sweetest, angelic, nicest child to ever be born. But when I do it, it's like a fire-breathing dragon.
Mm-hmm.
So,
exactly.
Yeah. So, and I'm being a little bit sarcastic, but the reality is it's true.
Mm-hmm.
So, it gets back to a little bit what I said a few minutes ago, is it's about value. Right. I'm going to say, when I say kids, I'm going to say kids who are old enough to work independently. So I say maybe 12 and up. To them, if it's not important to them and they feel they're old enough to have that independent decision, that's where there's the clash with the parents. So what I need to do is show to them, listen, if I can show you what it takes 5 minutes to plan out the next 2 hours so that those 2 hours are way, way more efficient than they would have been otherwise, will you do it, and will you actually make it work? So you got to get a buy-in first.
Yes.
Now, as a parent, you could do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Peggy, listen, we're going to sit down. We're going to plan out our evening tonight or our day today or our school day today, whatever. And I want your input. But once we commit to it, I need you to commit to it. Are you okay with that?
Right.
Sure, Mom.
Yeah.
Love to.
Mm-hmm.
So I think some of this, and this is really going beyond time management, it's a parenting discussion, it is giving, and I don't love using this word here, but I'm going to use it anyway, ownership of the conversation and the process to the kids, if they're old enough and responsible and independent enough to handle it.
Right.
Or at least
giving them, I know some parents, like, they have, you know, the schoolwork that needs to be done in different buckets. And then which bucket do you want to do first?
Yes.
Or if I get to choose the first bucket, then you get to choose the second bucket.
It's all part of the details that we haven't gotten to yet. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But the point is, if the kid agrees to the buy-in and they don't do it, then you have to have consequences.
Right.
There has to be accountability. That's a piece of this as well.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't have both. You can't have one without the other.
Right.
Or you can't not... be willing to push the consequences, you know, to...
Well, and the consequences eventually, if they're not using the skills, is they're not going to get things done and they're not going to have time. So, they're going to have to learn that one way or the other anyways.
That's the theory, right? So here's, to break this down a little bit, because, listen, we're not talking about people building, you know, the Sistine Chapel here.
Right.
This isn't brain surgery. Basically, this is my basic process. So if people are wondering, hey, what's this guy really talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Number one, you have to have a planning phase. We have to look at the scope of what needs to be done in whatever period of time it is. Normally, you don't go beyond a day.
Right.
Right. But sometimes you're going to have longer-term considerations. So here's the idea. We have a meal, you know, in the homeschool community, 8:30 in the morning, whatever. We're going to have a little powwow. And we're going to plan out our day. We're going to look at what needs to get done. And we need to, this is important, approximate how much time you believe that's going to take.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, A, what needs to get done? Let's make a list. Let's see if I can find it in here. If anybody wants this, I can send it to them. But I use a chart that looks something like this. And it's really, it could be a spreadsheet or whatever, but so we have a column. This, I'm probably not doing this well, but we have a column that just physically lists everything, okay? Mm-hmm. Then what we do is we say, okay, what's the priority? That's the P right there. Mm-hmm. Okay, is that high priority? Is it low priority? Is it super high priority? Then we rank it. So we may have four things that are high priority. So one's going to be like high one, high two, high three, high four. Mm-hmm. So we take every single assignment, whether it's going to take 1 minute or 90 minutes, and we're going to rank them one to however many there are. Mm-hmm. Then we take that, we circle back, and we shuffle them around and say, all right, we're going to do them in this order. Then you got to stick to it. Now, again,
right.
I said not rocket science, but the key, the secret here is having a plan, having a system. And there's a lot of nuance to this I'm not getting into, mm-hmm. but then really the execution is the key. And right. It's perfectly fine. And I encourage people, especially if it's, if this works well in an academic setting, if you're planning a day, like a school day, mm-hmm. also works very well in a homework setting. But you need to build other things in. You can build in breaks. It's not healthy for a kid to sit there for 7 straight hours doing schoolwork.
Right, exactly.
I mean, they need to get up and run around and mm-hmm. eat and, I don't know, whatever.
Right, so those sensory breaks, those lunch times, they're priorities within yes. that schedule.
Mm-hmm. So you build them in. And so to kind of circle back, we get a complete list of what needs to get done, which is going to fall into two categories. One, mm-hmm. I call them short term, things that need to get done that day. In other words, they're basically homework for tomorrow.
Right.
Now, with homeschooling, you don't always have quite the deadlines you might in a public school or another forum, but they exist, especially if you're on a preset curriculum and mm-hmm. you have timestamps. The second thing would be longer term things. Like, for example, it's Tuesday, and I'll just use math. Tomorrow we need to do unit 6.5, problems 1 to 12, and they have to be done by 5 o'clock today. That'd be short term. But now we also know next Monday we have a quiz on chapter 6.
Right.
Now here's really the beauty of the system is we account for both. Mm-hmm. I don't take for granted working with a child that just doing their homework is adequate for them to also study for a quiz or something else. I consider that a separate, for lack of a better term, assignment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they say, all right, let's do the homework. Let's get that done. That assumes they understand it and, you know, don't need actual support in terms of the logistics of it. Mm-hmm. Now, let's circle back and review. How we're going to review, we got to go back and look at the other material you had as well. Mm-hmm. And there's always an overlay into, I guess, what we could call tutoring as opposed to sort of a time management concern. But that's the idea. So we have short-term, long-term. Mm-hmm. We have daily priority. What are you going to do first, second, third? What's high, what's low, what's medium priority? Mm-hmm. Then we have the long-term ones that we can look at, tests or quizzes you might have down the road, maybe right. a paper or a project that's mm-hmm. due in however many days or however many weeks.
Well, I think that's where a lot of students get most tripped up is those things that are the longer term, because we can check off those to-do lists of, yes, I got this little assignment done, but the ones that are further out have a little bit more ambiguity or require more days of input,
yes.
studying and work, that's how do we prioritize and build that in over a long term versus, you know, the last minute deadline that they will push it off to.
The easier answer is you just make it a daily activity.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I mean, that's my system or the system I have used and created. Look, this is kind of like the parents not getting through their kids when somebody else can.
Yeah.
How many people out there, a little show of hands, have ever had a situation where a kid knew about a test for 2 weeks but didn't study for it till 11 o'clock the night before?
Right.
Never happened. It never happened to anybody I knew. So you ask yourself, why is it in a world where everybody knows this is coming,
mm-hmm.
you got this test. It isn't like the teacher sprung it on you or the curriculum sprung it on you that morning.
Right.
So why is it so... epidemic's a bad word to use right now. Why is it so common mm-hmm. that this happens so much? And I think it's partly because kids are just inherently lazy. You know, you give a 14-year-old a choice. You want to do homework or you want to go play? I'm not going to pick homework most of the time anyway. But that's why, especially if you're a facilitator, and I don't know if you have a word every body in your homeschool communities use, but facilitator is a big one in my kind of geography. Coordinator, facilitator, they don't usually use the word teacher, is kind of my point. Mm-hmm. I think this is what you really have to ingrain into your communities, is that, yes, we need to get done what's on the plate for that day. Absolutely, that's obvious. What's right. not as obvious is we also have to consider what's coming up down the road as equally important.
Right.
Maybe not for the next day equally important, but equally important in terms of your academics, your education, your commitment to it. That I build in to the time management piece, and I build it in through a priority, through the priorities of it.
Right.
So again, to repeat myself, we collect the list, we rank short-term or long-term, we prioritize with each one of them, we set the time boundaries, we build in breaks, now we created a schedule, and now we go to work.
I can see the benefit of a parent or an advisor or somebody working with a student helping them to see that at first, because it's not the most obvious that this is what I need to do today.
No.
And so that kind of outside influence of, but remember, you know, and to add that to the list.
Well, in the beginning, for sure, the facilitator, teacher, coordinator, head person, call them what you may, is going to have to model this. This is something you're going to have to do with, for sure, maybe even for your students initially.
Right.
Because if they already knew how to do it, they would do it.
They would do it, exactly.
Right. So in the beginning, definitely daily. I do this almost every session I have to this day with students when we're working on academics. Not for an hour, you know, for a few minutes, because it sets the stage.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, you could use a gazillion metaphors. If you're going to make a meal for dinner, you got to have your stuff in the refrigerator, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of the same parallel. You got to have your ingredients. So when you go to cook, you're not looking around for everything, wasting time.
Right. Yeah.
To boil a lot of this down, a word this drives to is just efficiency, right? I mean, because we're not really discussing, at least sort of conspicuous by its non-mention, is good grades or bad grades, right?
Hmm.
Somebody could be the most time-efficient person in the world and get Fs.
Exactly.
I mean, obviously nobody wants that. And everybody has the example. Every kid's like, oh, yeah, my friend Johnny down the street, he never does anything. He's got terrible study habits. He don't do anything on time. Hmm. And he gets A's. You know, there's always the counterexample that's frustrating.
Right, exactly.
Right, you know, it's like the person that smokes and drinks and eats crappy foods and never gets a heart attack, and the person who runs every day, unfortunately, does. But, you know, there's always that, and kids always pick up on that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can find a person like that, a needle in a haystack.
Exactly. You don't
right. But to your point, which I completely agree with, is this has to be taught over time with the expectation that it's going to take some amount of time, number one, for the student to accept the fact that it's valuable, and I've said that before, two, to get them to be able to understand how to actually do it on their own. So there's kind of a weaning process. In the beginning, it's like 95% facilitator, 5% student, and it gets closer to 50-50, and then you reach a point where student can kind of do it on their own, or at least should do it on their own.
Right.
And the facilitator, teacher, parent can kind of just check it and say, yeah, great, well done, now let's go do it.
Right. It's that kind of scaffolding process where you just kind of give them what they can handle at first and kind of just take it away as they overtake those different habits and make them integrate them on their own.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so that's the idea. And you know, as a teacher, you know, not every child's going to pick this up as quickly as others.
Right.
Not all of them are going to embrace it. It's also age related to a degree.
Mm-hmm.
You're not expecting a 8-10-year-old to pick this up and be as independent as a 16-year-old should be.
Exactly.
But what we're really doing on a level is preparing our kids for when they're not in our nest anymore.
Mm.
right? Mm-hmm. At some point, 18, 19, 17, they're going off to University of XYZ. Mm-hmm. You know, we are saying, hey, we spent all this time teaching them their skills.
Right.
Teaching them to be independent. Why did we homeschool? Because we wanted free-thinking, independent-based kids, right? I mean, that's clearly not the only reason people homeschool, but I mean, it's one of the reasons, right? They're not, you know, stuck in the public school dogma kind of thing. So
right.
we as homeschool advocates, that's one of the goals we have, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we also need the nuts and bolts, or as you call it, the scaffolding, great choice of words, so that when they are in an environment where they don't have that support anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You can't homeschool your kid at University of Texas. Or,
right,
exactly. Is there a University of Houston? I guess, right?
Yeah, there's a University of Houston.
Okay, there you go. Right.
Yes, that's where my oldest just graduated from.
Oh, well, congratulations. There you go. Are they the Oilers? I don't know. What would they be in you? The Astros?
I don't know. We never watched
them. Cowboys? I don't know what they have in Texas. Yeah, I'm provincializing myself here, being from the Northeast. But what my point is, we invest our time, our energy, our resources, our love into these children because we want them to be able to do this all independently, but well, so that when at some point the cord's cut and they fly to nest and use whatever empty nester metaphor you want, that we can be confident that they're going to be strong self-advocates.
Right. Oh, so you know? Yeah, well, we're about halfway through our conversation.
Oh, we are. Wow.
So, yeah. So I'm going to take a quick break and let Dr. Green take a breather. And we're going to hear from our sponsor. And then I'm going to bring him back and we're going to continue this wonderful conversation. So we'll see you just in a moment, Dr. Green. And I thank all of you for joining us. And I also thank Homeschool Education Collective for sponsoring this episode of Sped Homeschool Conversations. They want you to know that homeschooling is a serious commitment and your invest in time and energy in your children every day, as well as doing all the planning, research, and problem solving needed for a great education. And they want you to know that Learn Well Home Education Collective can help you by taking these tasks off your plate so you can homeschool with confidence. You can join Learn Well, and when you do, you'll have both a grade level and special needs expert supporting you every step of the way. They'd love to serve you as you homeschool this year. You can find out more at learnwellcollective.org or contact them at info@learnwellcollective.org. And also, just so you know, that as broadcast watchers, YouTube watchers, Facebook watching, and if you're listening on our podcast, you can save 10% off your membership with them by using the code SPED, and that is all in caps, on your application. So we definitely thank you for your sponsorship. We thank you for your partnership with us, and they also have a listing on our website as well if you want to learn more about them. But otherwise, check out their website at learnwellcollective.org. So we're going to bring Dr. Green back, and we're going to continue our conversation talking about teaching time management to students. And if you're watching live, which I see some of you are, and you have any questions or comments, that's why we are live. So definitely put those in the feed. We'd love to have you as part of our conversation. We are live right now on Facebook, on YouTube, as well as on Periscope. So wherever you're watching from, we welcome you. And look forward to hearing from you and where you are, and just how your student has struggles with time management. Maybe you can ask Dr. Green what his advice is. So I love some of the words that you used in the beginning half, value and investment, and also that we focus on what's most important, and it's not like, you know, eating the whole elephant. We just have to, you know, figure out what the priorities are and how to attack that. And simplified it greatly. So just wanted to point those things out. And
well, the truth is, and it's a little bit like we closed that segment with, we as adults, as parents, we get so invested in the day-to-day, the minute-to-minute.
Mm-hmm.
And because we have to, right?
Yeah.
Every day's got some struggle, some challenge, especially if you have multiple kids or you're involved in a larger kind of collective this way. But in the end, it's pretty much, as I was saying right before we broke, is we are investing in our kids. We're trying to pass on our knowledge, our accumulated expertise, whether we did it ourselves or got it from any resource, you know, like the Learn Well, you know, any place you can get value from, why not?
Right.
So I think that, I don't think that gets lost in the shuffle, but I think sometimes it gets kind of pushed down a little bit. So, you know, because sometimes you don't really appreciate the wins, quote unquote, until there's an opportunity for it to happen. Like, well, you don't really get report cards, but, you know, it isn't like you get a grade every hour, you know, so it's like, oh, wow, right. I did this, you know, and you know, it's hard. Listen, I work with a lot of different educational modes, and homeschooling is not easy. I mean, there's days I'm sure a lot of parents out there going, ah.
Yeah, exactly.
And rightfully so. It's frustrating. It's difficult. You're worrying about how you're going to do the next lesson. Mm-hmm. Are there parents experiencing this? You know, am I the only one who's having this frustration? Sound like a great idea when I first got into it.
Right.
So I think sometimes as parents, facilitators, I think sometimes we have to understand that we're working hard too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
that's so true.
I look at my role as kind of being a provider of resources, right?
Mm-hmm.
If what I do can make your life as a facilitator, I'm going to just keep using that word, easier, which in turn makes the results we get with our children better.
Yes.
We've succeeded, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really important. The other thing I wanted to bring into the discussion, is what I have found, especially in the last 2 to 4 years, is really the importance of structure, which I differentiate from time management. They're going to overlap. They dovetail for sure. So I have some thoughts about that. I think what I've observed, listen, gone are the days, maybe not completely, but at least where I am, where if you want to learn about an animal, you go to the zoo. But if you want to learn about,
right.
Well, I live near Philadelphia, so, you know, people take field trips to like Independence Hall and, you know, see the Declaration of Independence, and that's how you would learn about American history, or you'd go to Benjamin Franklin's house, things like this. That's not really what homeschooling is for the most part at this point, right? I mean,
just
people can still
COVID.
Do that, but
yes.
because it's all online,
exactly.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And instead of going there, you go to some virtual website or something, and that's not a bad thing. I'm not criticizing that. It's just a different experience. So what I have found, and I've done 3-hour workshops on this, so you're going to get the very, very abstracted version of it, is I've identified 5 structures that you can kind of overlay and intertwine with the whole time management discussion we had before that I think parents, facilitators, whatever, will find useful. So if you'll indulge me with that.
That'd be great.
So one is you have to have a physical structure that works for you. You know how many times I've had a parent call me up and say, Steve, little Peggy's the smartest girl in Harris County. Isn't there Harris County near you?
Harris County is downtown Houston.
My memory's still working.
You got it there.
She's the smartest little girl in Harris County. But I go in her room, and she's doing homework on her bed. She's got the pillow there. She's got stuffed animals. She's got the radio on. She's got texting her friends. She's got this over here, this over there. There's no structure physically that's going to create the greatest success we want. So you have to be able to get that. You got to get a desk, not to be a perfect desk, like at least an open space, a decent enough computer. I mean, that's just unfortunately the reality today.
Mm.
Internet. So there's a physical component to what we need. Okay. Second one is academic. Something has to drive the academics. Okay. Now, in a lot of cases, people are buying curriculum. Or they're buying resources like your sponsor, Learn Well. I imagine there's some curriculum that they can provide or something to help, right? So something has to drive the academics. In the old days, that was somewhat kind of the creativity of the homeschooling parents.
Mm-hmm.
Let's learn math today because we'll get apples and we'll eat the apples. And if you have 8 apples and you eat 2, how many are left?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's obviously very, very rudimentary. But so we got a physical structure. We got an academic structure. Third one, which is what ties it in, is a time structure. You could have a great place to work. You'd have a good academic situation. But if your time management is bad, not as good. The fourth one is accountability. Who are you going to be accountable to? Now, in some cases, they're accountable to a curriculum.
Right.
I have families I support and consortiums I support where the curriculum has deadline. Hey, this assignment is due by X day at X time. If it's not done, you get 10 points off or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It may be a parent. It may be an instructor. In my role, I'm usually kind of teaching a topic the parents aren't capable of teaching.
Mm-hmm.
Intellectually, they just don't know the material. So you have an accountability piece. Who is holding the person, the student's responsible, and how do they show that they've done it?
Right.
Then the last one, the last structure is support. Number five is support.
Hmm.
I think it's important and super useful that when you do need help, it's not something you need to rush around and try to find right then.
Yes. That is
so true. Even if you don't need it, and the analogy I use is who's your dentist before you get a toothache, right?
Right.
You don't want to be running around when you wake up in the middle of the night
mm-hmm.
trying to find a dentist in the, I was going to say the yellow pages, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm showing my age really good now.
Google.
Right. So, but I think you understand where I'm going with it.
Right.
Is if you believe some point you're going to need help with time management or math or history or Spanish or name it, try to get those resources in place before you need them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or find a place that you could get them on sort of a very low level that when you need to accelerate or ramp up,
mm-hmm.
you've got availability.
Yeah. That's,
and I've had this discussion. Like I said, I do a 3-hour workshop where I break all these down for about a half hour. And believe me, you can talk about them more. And it's not because I get all excited about them, it's just because it's that broad.
Right. Yeah. And they can be unique and different based on the child's learning needs, the family situation. I mean, we've homeschooled from being in an RV to, and talk about different spaces. I mean, you just have to accommodate for whatever season that you're in.
Absolutely. What brought this to the forefront, and the reason I get asked to speak about it a lot more, is just the reality that almost every school is in some virtual situation somehow right now.
Yep.
Which, interestingly enough, has sort of brought everything more into the middle.
Hmm.
It used to be kind of sort of, you got homeschooling over here.
Right.
You got... lack of a better term, traditional schooling over here. And they kind of never really interfaced, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was either one or the other.
Right.
Well, you know what the great equalizer is everybody's online now.
Yeah.
To some degree, right? I mean, where I am, I'm going to say 10% of the schools have some amount of live education.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of them are still all virtual.
Wow.
So this is where these five structures are really clutch.
Hmm.
Because it isn't as simple as saying to a kid, go study, go be in front of your computer. You also have parents at home because they can't go into their office, right?
Right.
So they're working remotely from home. They're trying to work, make a living.
Exactly.
Right. Oversee their kids.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure they're not messing around all day. Getting their work done. So the marriage of these structures with the time management is really, I don't want to say life-changing. It's not quite that dramatic.
It's upset the apple cart, definitely.
It definitely does, right? And these are not really difficult things to correct if you're committed to correcting them and you have the right tools.
Yeah, I think that is the case. And we've even seen it from the homeschool side where, people used to do a lot more things out and about, and now they're having to do them virtually. And like you said, it's kind of pulling the two together in that space. And so we've seen the tug from that end as well from our parents who are, used to going to co-ops and field trips and all these other things that have kind of just stagnated with the situation. So,
and I think they'll come back, when it's ready to. But I mean, sometimes this is kind of like a chicken and egg thing. Does the circumstance drive the need?
Yeah.
Or does the need sort of overtake the circumstance in a way?
Mm-hmm.
I maintain that the circumstances are going to be there no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a matter of having the tools and having the wherewithal and the ability to use the tools properly to deal with your circumstances.
Well, I think it goes back to what you were talking about at the very beginning, was planning.
Mm-hmm.
And taking that time out as a parent with your student to do that necessary planning. Because if you don't, it just all snowballs on you through the day. And like you said, you know, we're all so busy and we've got so many things going on with just even in our home environment that it makes it difficult. So do you have any pointers for, you know, just prioritizing even that planning part or kind of getting that jump started?
Yes. Yeah, of course I do. Very loaded. But no, I have no idea. Number one is it has to be a top-down decision, right?
Hmm.
If you go, when I say you, I mean the parent slash facilitator slash coordinator, whatever,
right,
to a student and say, hey, guys and girls, you want to plan your day out? You know what they're all going to say?
Exactly. Why? Like,
what?
Something nice didn't
for me
to do
yesterday. Right. So you have to, the tip number one is you have to package it as something that's going to make their lives easier, make their lives simpler, and create an easier situation for them. Three things, right?
Right.
Hey, Peggy, I got a great idea. You know, I was listening to this SPED podcast yesterday. This incredible speaker was on, and this fantastic host was on, and I have an idea. Why don't we sit down for 5 minutes and just plan your day out? Because I want you to help me do that. Because I know if we do that together, we're going to get some great ideas, and it's just going to make everything go a lot better today. Can you help me with that?
Right.
Now, versus, Peggy, it's 8:30. Come on, let's plan your day.
Right.
Now, obviously, yeah. I'm you know doing that for effect, right?
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes you're not in the mood. You're
right.
A little irritated as a parent.
Mm-hmm.
Something else is happening, you know, the dog's barking, I don't know, the sink's leaking,
right. Well,
bathroom,
we get rolling through our mind, this is how it's gone before, this is how it's going to happen again, and this child is just
and it's only that much more difficult when you have two, three, or a group of people to manage, right?
Right, exactly.
So tip number one is the person who... I'll say responsibility, even. I think that's a little strong. But the person who needs to bring this to the table is the person managing the situation. Number two is
so true.
It has to be a long-term solution.
Mm.
It will not work well, if at all, if you do it once for one day or a week, and then you back off and say, you got it now.
Right, because you have to build that habit.
Absolutely.
And that takes a long time.
It can.
Mm-hmm.
And that takes persistence. But
yes. But
the value is, keep talking about value, is the 5 minutes a day you do it, eventually won't take 5 minutes anymore because you get better at it, and you'll save, I promise you this, way more than 5 minutes down the road of time that you won't have to use on something else later because you've got everything planned so well.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, passing that value along as to, it's valuable, and it's worth that investment.
And listen, are we really asking kids to do anything that's that ridiculously out of line?
Of course not.
Right. It's not like we're saying, hey, oh my God, you can't use your phone today. I mean, that would be terrible, right? I mean, we're basically going to say, listen, we are partnering here on your academics. The reason I, as your parent, or whoever I am in relationship to you, have chosen to spend half my day helping to teach you, because I want you to be further ahead than you would have been under some other circumstance.
Right.
Here's an additional tool we're going to bring into this dynamic that's going to make that even easier and more productive for you.
Right.
See? Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, look, it always sounds easier until you actually have to go do it. But when you have a clear idea of what you want to accomplish... It's much easier to put that into play.
Right. Yeah. And having it clarified through your speech and just by how you prioritize that conversation, like you said, bringing that in first and passing value on.
And listen, is there any real honest expectation it's going to go perfectly well the first time? Right.
Right.
I mean, it's going to be a process.
Mm-hmm.
And if we get 40% right the first day and 52% the second day, as long as we're driving to a goal, then it's worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. I completely agree.
Sometimes, I mean, this is not really the way you want to do it, but sometimes even the absence of a bad habit is better than no habit.
Very true.
Yeah, I got to write that down because that came out. That actually came out pretty well.
there's so many things that we have to eliminate.
Right.
Maybe even to just make time to add in new things.
Yes. Yeah. It's. I guess you could look another devil's advocate. If it was so easy, we'd already be doing it, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think much of anything we've talked about for the last 45 or whatever minutes. Is that far out of the realm of common sense or sensible approach to anything academic. Hey, here's a real incredible news flash, people. Let's try to manage our time better. Nobody ever thought of that, have they? but it's just, it's making it way up there on the list, not just when we can possibly get to it. Mm-hmm. And it's not saying, gee, if my kid decides they're okay doing it, we're going to deal with it. You have to decide, along with maybe some of the other things I suggest, that these are things that you want to make important.
Right. Yeah. You know? And you see the value again of it in the long term of how it's going to affect all of what you're doing with your students.
Yes.
And your children. I think that's something that we lose perspective on because we see the lessons, we see the to-do list, we see those day-to-day, and I loved how you pointed that out, you know, that those longer-term things, and it's that long-term goal of seeing our students succeed through the productive, you know, accumulation of everything we're doing through their whole, you know, I've homeschooled for, this is my 19th year. You know, what I've done for 19 years hasn't been productive. And I sure hope, you know, I've used my time wisely. So, yeah.
Well, I think there's no absolute judgment, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's no, this, for sure, there's no only one way to do any of this, right? I mean, because the approach can be as different as every kid's different.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think anybody as a parent should beat themselves up because they're not the perfect homeschool parent,
no.
Right? And I'm not suggesting you said that at all. But I think it's easy to question yourself and say, am I doing the right thing? Was this maybe a little bit of a mistake? Should I have done something else? Should I have brought somebody else in? And that's normal. I think that's natural.
Yeah,
and I think
it
happens more often as your kids get older.
Yeah.
And the curriculum becomes more complex.
Mm-hmm.
And by nature, they have to start working more independently because you can't hold a kid's hand academically when they're 16
mm-hmm.
like you will when they're 8.
Yeah.
So if you've been doing this 19 years, you've had at least a few kids go from way young to
graduated.
You
know,
right.
Beyond.
Exactly. And then you got one coming out of college or done college.
Yeah.
So I think, look, just the fact that that happened is a level of success for sure, right?
Mm-hmm.
They went off to college, made it, graduated, I hope, in 4 years, not 9.
Right. Five.
So, all right, that's not too bad. We'll take five. But you know, there, no matter what I am pretending today, there are things we can measure in a minute to minute, hour to hour, and day to day basis.
Mm-hmm.
But there are things that you just can't look at beyond the horizon of a half year, a year, or even a 3-4 year period.
Exactly.
It just takes that long for some of these things to manifest.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, but I think they're rooted in the daily activities, the daily habits, and the positioning that the reason we're doing it is for a long-term gain.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think that summarizes what you talked about so perfectly. It is. It's those daily things, but it's what if we do them consistently and we make sure they stay at the forefront and we give them value, and not only in our own heads but to our children. That will then take them beyond, as you were talking about earlier, and apply them into their lives. These are their tools that we're giving them as instructional gifts to succeed in their careers, their college, you know, wherever they go.
Mm-hmm.
So we got a few minutes left. Is there anything you want to share that's...
Well, I love doing these kind of things. I really appreciate, the invitation to be on your show.
Oh, you are welcome.
I enjoyed the conversation. I hope
it was wonderful.
28,000 listeners did as well. I love, you know, feedback. I love interacting with families and parents. I have my own, you know, I have a show on Thursday nights, Peggy, if you'd like to come
right.
on. We talked about that briefly in the,
yeah,
in
I
the
would love
pre-show.
To be a guest.
You know, we can see how that, I'll get you the details on that offline. But that's, I call it Education Live Thursday. And it's a broad-rooted, you know, a lot of different things. You know, I've had college admissions counselors on there. I've had nutritionists on there. I had a yoga instructor there talking about breathing and relaxation exercises.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty eclectic that way, and I enjoy it. It's a half hour, 45 minutes.
Awesome.
One other thing I'll throw out there is if people are interested, I have a support community that I host. It's online. It's a monthly subscription. It's not expensive. And I, you know, love to offer that up to anybody who's watching this. So it's makethegrade.community. One thing I've done well is I branded everything.
So
makethegrade.community. Yes, that's
so
okay.
That's great.
So, but if you go to the website, which is flashing.
Yeah, makethegrade.net.
I can't get my finger.
They should be able to get you to the.
Yeah, no, it's front and center on that. That's my big outreach thing to the world. It's a community. People can go in there, they can literally they can take a picture of a question from a math book or a history book and it'll get answered.
Awesome.
There's a lot of peer-to-peer help. Mm. I have a whole panel of experts. I have school psychologists, I have teachers, I have administrators. There's like 20 allied professionals that contribute into there. It's worldwide in the sense that it's in like 6 countries, but it sounds better to say worldwide.
Yeah.
So it's kind of cool. You can start talking to people in Canada and England about differences and how they do what they do. And it's kind of like my legacy at this point. It's taking on a life of its own, which is really neat.
Yeah.
I'm directing it and I'm trying to drive it and make sure that all the nuts and bolts are handled. But I love the fact that people are kind of taking it in their own direction and moving with it. And that's really gratifying.
Yeah.
The book
is
like one
of your points you said. Yep. You need support.
Yeah, listen, everybody needs support at some point. And I'm happy to help, but I'm just saying you don't want to have to look for it when you need it.
Mm-hmm.
Plan ahead. The community I have is a great resource for that. If you can't find what you need in there, somebody will tell you where you can get it.
Yep.
That I can pretty much promise you.
Awesome.
But
I'll
tell you one more thing.
Real
quick.
I definitely want you to plug that one.
Yeah,
more
let me.
Time.
Well, let me tell you what to do with the book. This book is priced to sell. It's only $10. You can buy it on Amazon, or you can buy it directly from my site, which I think actually shunts you to Amazon.
For podcast listeners, that's called Maximum Education.
Maximum Education.
By
yes.
Dr. Steve Green.
For the month of November, I'm donating whatever proceeds come from that book to a local food bank near me.
Awesome.
Actually, two. It's one, but they have two kitchens. October, I donated it to an animal shelter. December, I haven't decided yet. It'll probably be some kind of family related holiday spirit kind of thing. So, the book is not about putting money in my bank. The book's about helping people.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Green. This was just an incredible conversation and, just full of encouragement. And I think for parents that, you know, where the rubber meets the road, this is, you know, this is how we move forward in helping our students to prioritize our homeschools and help with time management overall. So I appreciate
Well,
your
listen,
insight.
I like to think I'm walking the walk. I'm not just, because I'm doing this every day too.
Yeah, I have a planner that has those priorities already too. So
good. Well, listen, let me thank you for hosting this and the work you do and what you bring to the community. And, you know, I appreciate that. So I'm looking forward to watching the replay.
Yeah.
I love watching myself on these things.
I always re-edit it the next day because we'll have shorter videos out next week through this, and the podcast will come out Sunday. So watch for those.
That's okay. It's good.
But I want to thank all of you for joining us here on SPED Homeschool Conversations. This does a wrap up our theme of at-home strategies. Next month, we're focusing on community. And I know that was the accountability part that Dr. Green was talking about. We're going to talk about different ways to build a community so you can get that accountability and that support on a regular basis. And so we're going to be talking with experts all over about local and different laws related to that and a whole bunch of other things. So definitely keep joining us through the month of November as we explore all of that. But thank you for joining us on this special matinee. We'll be back to our regular time on Tuesday evenings at 8 o'clock Central until 9. But until then, have an awesome day, everybody, and we'll see you next time right here on Sped Homeschool Conversations. Bye, everyone.